next 8-4 Play podcast, your first greatest home for talk about Japan games and Japanese games. I am still your host, Mark Gaming Jesus McDonald. With me, we have a special guest. Wait for it. Maybe you'll recognize his voice if he talks early, but we'll introduce him last. But so starting off with the regulars, the crew. That is the man wearing a Mario hat for some reason. That is Gabriel Boost Baller de Leon.
It's cold, so I'm wearing a hat. What's the problem with that?
It's cold, so you're wearing a hat. Okay. Well, yeah. No, there's nothing wrong with that. It's it's getting everybody in the mood. John's got a hat on too, which we'll get to. But
it's festive.
So Gabe, you kind of pulled some shenanigans and got your immunity booster, even though there's starving children in Japan yet to get their first vaccine shot.
Oh,
you like pushed them out of line and got your boost shot already, your Pfizer.
That's not how the Japanese government sees it, Mark. I don't know what you're talking about. No, I don't know. I'm not quite sure what you're talking about there. On the paper, this is my first vaccination. I don't see what the issue is here.
Ah, so you got your first two overseas and you got your third one here.
I got Johnson & Johnson back in the summer.
In fairness, you did get the chintzy, shitty Johnson & Johnson shot. So so maybe it is good.
The Acme vaccine.
But they're a family company.
Exactly. Yeah. So I got the Johnson & Johnson vaccine back in the summer, came back to Japan, and I've just been sitting on the Pfizer ticket here. And I think last week the FDA in America approved Pfizer as a if you got Johnson & Johnson, go ahead and get a Pfizer booster shot. Mix and match those bad boys.
But you're going to have to now go get, if Japan starts requiring vaccination, proof of vaccination for things, you're going to go get a second, technically your third shot. You're just going to do that and get the form. Okay.
Yep. So I have a record of being vaccinated in both the U.S. with my little chintzy CVS card and whatever the document you can get from the ward office whenever you need one of those.
Well, there you go.
Mark. Yeah, Gabe, you talked about his Mario hat. I learned, we had lunch the other day, and I learned from Gabe that he wears Mario and Luigi hats rather frequently. And, we had Shake Shack. We went and had a burger at Shake Shack, and I heard the story. Nice. I'm telling your story, Gabe, but I heard the story of how Gabe went to, was the Super Nintendo World at the time you made that trip, that you stopped in at a Shake Shack and the staff recognized you because of how frequently you went to the Shake Shack? Freak occurrence.
So I used to play futsal a lot pre-pandemic, and after futsal, I would go to the Shake Shack. So I always went there. I had either a Mario or Luigi hat. I would go, have my burger, mind my own business, whatever. So I went to Kansai last month or whatever, and I went to the Shake Shack in Kyoto, and I'm minding my own business. I have my Luigi hat on, and then all of a sudden, some dude just sort of walked up to me and just went It took 3 seconds, and then I recognized him as the manager from the Ebisu Shake Shack.
Whoa, what?
Isn't that crazy?
Wow. He was like, "Hey, it's you." And I was like, "Yeah, it's..."
You should have said, "It's a me."
It's a me.
Oh, man, set that one right up. The T-ball. Gabe, your nickname was going to be about... It seems like you're winning some kind of fucking lottery every week. Some lottery or another.
You only hear about the ones I win, not all the ones I lose.
We heard about a bunch of the ones you lost too, I guess. So the PS5, you were playing those lotteries. Finally won a PS5. You got a OLED. You got the Swold from a lottery. And what else? Some wrestling tickets or something?
Yeah, I'm going to Wrestle Kingdom. Was it 15 or 16? I don't know. The next New Japan Pro Wrestling event. Their WrestleMania, their big...
Awesome. That's the New Year's. That's the one that they do once a year around New Year's time.
Tokyo Dome.
John, John, you went to that once, right?
I've been to a couple, yeah. Yeah.
Wow. My brother flew to Japan for that once, actually.
Whoa.
He's a big wrestling
fan. It's a good time.
Yeah, what should Gabe expect, John? Any pro tips for the...
I think you've been there before, right, Gabe?
Yeah, I say my first rodeo.
Gabe's a regular member.
Well, that just doesn't make good podcasts.
But Gabe was so excited to win the opportunity to buy the... He was telling us about how he won the tickets to go to Wrestle Kingdom. Oh, that's awesome. You get to go for free. And it's like, no. He just won the opportunity to buy them. He's been beaten down by these lotteries here in Japan so much that he's just happy for the chance to give away his money.
Yeah, that's how it works here.
Speaking of being beaten down by Japan, man who's... ready to party like it's 1998. That is John Ricciardi. Hey, that rhymed.
Is this what is 1998? Is this related to Zelda or what?
It's related to N64.
N64, baby. Yeah. Yeah, man. It's here.
So people are like legitimately excited about this. I thought most of the good games that were out on N64 had come to other things or.
Oh, yeah. There's nothing. I don't think there's anything new here. Maybe the previous ones didn't. Did they? They had save states. Yeah, I don't think there's anything especially new other than that, you know, if you listen to people on the internet, it sounds like the emulation's not as good as it used to be. A lot of people complaining about the quality of these ports.
Well, let's talk about what it is first, right?
Sure.
So it's the new Switch Online
expansion pack. Yeah. Okay. Which was released last week. They added N64 games, they added Sega Genesis games, they released controllers for each, and you have to pay an extra fee. And a lot of people are up in arms about this fee, which I personally do not think is actually that high when you do the math, but I get it. I guess people are just used to, you know, having played all these games for years and so on and so forth. But anyway, for an extra fee, you get access to a bunch of games, and that's what we're talking about.
Right. There's like a tweet that went viral that was it Ocarina of Time that showed like the original, the Wii version, the Wii virtual console version, and then this version. And like the water texture was like obviously very, very fucked up. I guess that's literally the only thing that I know or I've heard about it is that tweet. But is that like rife through the game? Is that rife through all of the games? Like, are they not emulated well?
I mean, we played about, I don't know, the first 2 hours or so of Ocarina, and like, it's fine. I mean, it's true. If you compare them,
Ocarina? How you're playing Ocarina now?
Yeah.
You could make an argument if you compare them, I think. But if you just sit down and play them, like,
you wouldn't really notice.
Just tickling your memories. Yeah, it's not like, I think the biggest thing is that because everything is cleaned up so much, kind of like it was on the GameCube version, like, you know, the stuff where there was fog on the N64 is kind of, the fog's kind of gone. But sometimes that fog, you know, even though it was there to kind of hide technical things, it was also there for atmosphere, right? So the atmosphere feels a little weird sometimes.
Right.
I remember we were standing on... Oh. Go ahead. No. Tell us.
So one specific place that really stands out to me is in the Lost Woods, in two specific places. One where if you go up a long staircase and then you look out behind you in the distance, what used to look like a really like mystical, magical, endless void of trees now is just a single tree line with just like empty pink behind it, which is a bummer.
Yeah.
But also in the Lost Woods, you're supposed to follow the music the first time you go there. You know, it's silence except for just the you know, little backbeat until you find the right path and then the melody picks up. In the N64 version, you could also do that visually because pipes are like the tunnels that led you back to the entrance had this cloudy bit in the middle that you could see really clearly. So you could just trial and error your way through the whole forest if the music wasn't working, or when you're an adult and you go back, you don't have the song guiding you anymore. You could use that to futz your way through it. And that's just not there anymore.
I noticed when you're standing under the Deku tree, like if you looked up, like you could just see the perfect outline of the leaves and stuff, and it did not look pretty because they didn't need to have it look pretty because you weren't meant to see it. Or,
right.
You know, there was a part where we were walking around outside the castle and like you could literally see the seams on the ground in the corners. Like you could actually see the lines of the polygons, and it was weird. And like, you know, I get it. Little things like that. I do feel like if you're charging money for this stuff, you should get this stuff pretty clear, you know, like
sure. Pretty, well, at least it's good as it's been emulated, you know, before on other Nintendo systems, especially. I mean, it is hard too, though. Where do you draw that line? Like, we're going to talk about RE4 Quest, which I think brings this up as well. But also, since last episode, the Grand Theft Auto remasters have been shown. And it's like, there's this weird thing going on, right? Where it's like, okay, like, yeah, that's kind of how it looked, but you've had to fill in a bunch of detail, and it's so sharp now, and it was never supposed to look this way. It was supposed to be cleared up, and so, like, there's a lot of gray area there, and different people can have different opinions and different memories of what they saw, and I think it's really hard to keep those things, basically keep them how you remember them looking, not as they actually look.
It totally is. And I mean, I don't want to be all negative, because actually I'm pretty happy with this and I'm excited. And I played some Star Fox 64 and that was really fun. And, you know, the controller's amazing. It's like, it feels exactly like the old controller. Stick was a little bit stiffer for me, but I don't know if that's just because it's brand new or if it's actually a little different.
That controller was so terrible, though.
It wasn't terrible. It was so weird, but it wasn't terrible. It was super comfortable for N64 games. You're the only person I hear complained about that, like, in my circle, because, like, I mean,
dude,
don't get me wrong. I'm not saying like, I would internet. Have designed it that way, but, like, back in the day in the N64 days, like, it was great for what it was, you know, for, like, the games that were. Dude, I mean, it felt good, and it feels good now, I feel like.
So, but having your thumb, you have your one hand on the thumb trigger, your other hand on the if you don't need the D-pad at all, but like the little, are they the D buttons? The little yellow buttons?
The C buttons.
Oh, like the shoulder buttons are so bad. Just like the travel and the
See, right now you're upsetting me on a visceral level. Like the nuclei so of my atoms are burning.
I mean, I think
controller, very interesting, very important failure.
I mean, I'm glad they re-released it, because I mean, I don't think N6. What?
Who dis?
I don't know why I'm yet either. It's fine.
Yeah.
We're still in the
there. You can keep talking. It's okay.
Well, sorry. We'll just do it. Thank you. Alex, CVX freak, Aniel, friend of the show, back to talk Resident Evil, but let's continue. And Tina Button, Tina Carter. I want to get into that nickname, but we'll field it for later. Go ahead, Alex.
Oh, yeah. I was just going to say, I mean, N64 games are really bad on the standard Joy-Cons. I actually find it unplayable. I'm actually really glad that they re-released the controller.
The default controller layout is bizarre. Like to be fair, I'm not a scientist and I didn't like spend time thinking about this too much, but like they reversed B and A.
Scientists work on
like, well, I feel like if you actually, I'm going to give them the benefit of this.
So I can weigh in on this N64.
We have friends in lab coats in NOA who are in, you know, a friend of the show who are doing this sort of work, but no, I mean, it is possible. They tried every possible combination and really deduced like, hey, this actually is the best. But like they literally reversed B and A, you know, like from what it is on the N64 controller in the default setup. It's bizarre. It makes no sense. Like,
really? I didn't know that.
Like two of the C buttons are replaced by like X and Y. And then the other two are like, you know, out of the way. Like it's just weird. It does not make sense. So yeah, you really do need the controller to kind of have it feel right. But anyway, just one thing I wanted to jump back to what we were talking about earlier. The thing about all this, though, you're right, Mark. Like, you could go, like, to endless levels to try to get this stuff to replicate how it should have been. But I think the big issue here is that they kind of got it right once already. Like, the Wii Virtual Console was fantastic. Yeah. Like, they got pretty much every platform, like, really, really well done. And it's kind of been, like, varying levels of not as good since then. And that's the part that's weird to me. It's like, when you already got it once... Right. Why would you not, you know, just keep that and move forward with that? So that's kind of a bummer.
So, Tina, you made the pilgrimage this month. Tina Button.
I done did it.
Is because they would not allow your... I'm assuming you were trying to use your Twitter.
I was trying to use Tona, and they wouldn't let me. And I don't know what's offensive about a toe or a nah. But if they said
T-O-E-N-A is what you were trying to use?
T-O-E-N-A. And Universal Studios Japan's official Nintendo Land app was like, that's inappropriate. Try again, bitch.
That means like
the fuck? Because I wasn't even trying to put in butt. I knew better than that. I knew not to try the butt.
Maybe it's a dirty word in another language or something like that. One of those.
So I couldn't do Tona. I had to go with fallback number like 3 because I've got a list of them. You know, I'm just cycling through all my options, and Tina Button was the first one that worked.
So how was your experience? Were you as blown away as Gabe and Michael Donahoe, our previous guests on the show, or what? Like, give us your day there.
It was real fun. So I went with another grown up, and I was excited, but I was also like, I'm an adult and I'm already tired. So we got there at like 10:30, and our timed entry for the Nintendo part of the park was 3:30. So we're like, all right, we have several hours to kill. What are we going to do? So we went to the fancy restaurant and sat there for 3 hours having booze.
Oh, nice. Adult
and
beverages.
Then we left and went to check out where the entrance was so that when, you know, our time came, we could just like blast right in there. And we found the entrance, and then we still had 45 minutes to kill. So then we went to the little food area in the Jaws part and had fries and more beers. So then we finally go to Nintendo World, and I'm like a couple beers in, and I'm like, wee, 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 having a great time. It was really fun. It was also...
That's making pictures that I've seen now are making a little more sense. Especially one that, like, where you found Princess Peach, and she's like, even though it's a mask, she somehow conveys, like, I'm a little bit concerned right now about what's going on. And you are very obviously excited.
Oh, super excited about it. So yeah. You have to line up. And while you're lined up to meet Princess Peach, which was, like, my number one thing I want to do, right? They have a person in charge of the line who's explaining to you, you know, don't look her in the eyes. Don't refer to her by her name.
Don't look at her in the eye.
I'm kidding.
Wow. Okay.
But like, yeah. You know, explaining, okay, our official cameraman is going to take 2 pictures. The first pose we're going to decide in line right now. And the second pose, you just imitate whatever she does. So like, they don't want you wasting any time up there. But I went in the gazebo. I did pose number 1 was me pointing excitedly, which he said he'd never seen before. And I was like, that's because you guys just want to do heart hands all the time. Like,
right.
Get excited.
Fucking losers.
And then the second pose that Princess Peach suggested was a cute pose where you like wrap one hand around your other fist and put it beside your cheek and lean over and look really cute.
Oh my God.
Which you all bet right. Your ass I did that. I looked hella cute probably, but I didn't buy the pictures because they were like $20.
That's what I was going to ask. Yeah.
I bought them.
Actually, I didn't intentionally.
You just took a picture of the picture and then used that basically?
No, I didn't intentionally not buy the pictures. I just completely plumb forgot to go back to the counter because I got tired.
But like, day drinking does not sound like a good plan for Super Nintendo World.
It was quite chaste. It was fine. And I would never describe us as turnt. We were lit, but we were never turnt.
All right. You're not
but we did all kinds of the activities. We went around finding a bunch of coins. I consistently got more coins out of the mystery boxes than my friend did, which was hilarious every time it happened.
Any highlights? Any highlights, lowlights? Things you hadn't heard us talk about that you were surprised about?
Not especially. I almost don't even really want to get into it because I feel like stuff that everyone's already heard is like, yeah, we know that.
Right,
like,
right.
There's more to do.
Pretty much what you expected.
There was more to do than I was expecting.
How did Princess Peach smell? Did she smell nice?
They wouldn't let me get that close. It was raining and they didn't want me to get her wet or anything, so... I couldn't approach. But I got the Princess Peach wristband, which meant I'm a real fan. So when I went in there, I was like, hey girl, I got your wristband, and she was all excited. So yay for me. Versus my friend got the Toad wristband. And as soon as we saw the Toad character, he was like, oh fuck, and immediately dipped because he thought it was creepy. I didn't want to meet him at all.
I got the Mario wristband too. So,
oh, we got like a good team going. We got a Mario, we got a Luigi, we got a Peach.
Yeah, I went for my.
You get to choose, or it's random.
You get to choose. You can just pick them at the store. I mean, I went for my birthday, so yeah, it's a surprisingly small area. Exactly. It's a small area, but there's surprisingly a lot to do, and I think the potential for Nintendo's theme parks is limitless. Like, I had a lot of fun just with this tiny area.
I still can't believe your name got denied, though. Like, I just went, while you were talking, I went through Google Translate like 50 different languages to see if it meant anything, and the only thing that came up was like in one language it's like translated to Diane, and like in another language it was just like, I forgot what it was. Can't it was just something super basic, like hey there or something. But yeah, I didn't
get out of here, Diane.
Yeah, so bizarre. Last week I went to the Universal Studios in Hollywood, and you can see the construction of their Super Nintendo area. Like, it's blocked off, but I don't know if anyone's been there recently, but there's like the four escalators you have to go down to get into the lower area at the Hollywood Park. And you can kind of see all the construction that's going on. So I think it opens like next year.
Does it look bigger or different from what you saw?
I think it might be the same size, if I had to guess. It's still like a minority of the park, but I think they're going for the same vibe. I don't think there's a Donkey Kong expansion area there yet.
Alex, I didn't realize they're doing a Hollywood too, because they're doing Florida, right? Florida is like the big one, I think.
Florida and Hollywood. I don't know about Singapore, but they did have a store already like selling Mario merch, and I bought this really cool 2D pixel art like Mario shirt. So
nice.
Oh man, I spent so much money at the merch. Like, it was not
all
about that merch.
But like, there's a bunch of different activities to do that we didn't even do. There's sort of like a little item collecting element within the app, and we did half of those activities, so I could go again and have the same amount of activity with which to engage, and it would all be new. And there's little achievements
told
in the
me
app.
Offline. That's what I was going to say. Yeah.
There's little achievements in the app, so you get stickers for completing things, but you also get, you get a stamp for having the highest score in your group. Ask me how I know. They've got
Gabe went back and did that until he won it. So
I got to do it only one time. You know, pro gamers over here.
Nice.
Pro gamers only.
Illegal substance abuse with the you were soft.
But like, there's stamps for visiting in each season. There was a stamp for visiting in October, which is like Mario and it's in like a little Halloween costume. There's a stamp for visiting within the first month of opening, which, like, RIP all the completionists, because you're never going to get that. Maybe other parts count. I don't know.
I needed that, because the second I saw that, I was like, okay, I don't have to collect.
Donahoe and my wife got, like, their vaccine shots at the same place, like on the same day. I had actually tipped him off to a place that was doing it, and so we went together, and like, he was telling me about that, and he was trying to get me to come, like, to go back so he can go back because the seasons were changing. And
tell him to call me. I will go.
We might make
right
this
on.
Cool.
Well, Alex, let's talk to you. I didn't even remember that you had been to Super Nintendo World, but believe it or not, that's not why we asked you here. There was something to talk about, Resident Evil. Who else to talk to than you? So RE4 launched for the Quest, I've been playing it. You've been playing it, John. You've been playing it.
I got it.
Bit?
I downloaded it. I haven't played it yet.
Okay,
I will play.
So okay, no, you won't. Come on.
Oh, I really will. Believe me, I wouldn't have taken the Quest out of the closet for the first time in like 6 months if not for that and Song in the Smoke. I'm going to play them both. So
actually, I played a bunch of Song in the Smoke too. We should talk about that. But so, Alex, how far are you? How much have you played?
Yeah, not too much, because I just got back to Japan 2 days ago, and this is a game that I have to play in short spurts, because otherwise I just get motion sickness. But
Are you getting motion sick from this one? Because I noticed they did some things that I've never seen. I haven't seen other games do. They have kind of state of the art. Like when you're moving, it makes your field of view actually smaller than it could be, which is one thing. And then they do the
I mean, it's highly customizable, so I don't really have much of a frame of reference other than RE7 VR. But yeah,
Did you get sick in RE7 VR?
That I also played in spurts. I don't know if it's motion sickness, but you know, I get this feeling that I just have to stop and rest or like drink water. Yeah. Like every like 30 minutes because
my wife gets that too. Like really, like, that's why I don't play as much as I used to, because like she would like want to watch me play through, but she has to be like super far away from the TV or she just gets sick in like 20-30 minutes, like every time.
And that's her watching. That's not VR. That's just her watching. That's the just 2D watching screen.
Yeah. I think it's just something about the viewpoint in those games. I don't know, or the movement speed or something, but
plus like the weight of the helmet kind of gets to me after a while. So, yeah, I usually just take breaks. I haven't gotten too far, but I'm getting used to it. I think there's a pretty, you know, in spite of its customizability, there's a pretty steep learning curve, especially if you go with the interactive mode where you have to actually imitate things like grabbing your gun or reloading your weapons, using the item screen, opening doors. It's not like RE7 where you just press a button to do all that stuff, right? Here you actually have to use your arms to imitate these real life motions. And
I love all that stuff. So you're opening for example, the bear trap on the dog at the very start, you have to grab the bear trap, open it up. Cabinets, doors, you're grabbing both of them, pushing and pulling. Keys you're inserting, turning, like the puzzles have all been redone so that they're actually like tactile and interactive. I'm like at the Del Lago. I'm like at the first boss. But I'm totally blown away. Like I was excited for this game in the first place, but I'm like surprised at how much I'm loving it. Like really loving it.
Is it the kind of thing where you're like, cause you were the world's like number one, you know, fan or promoter of RE7 in VR, but like, is it totally surpassing that, or is it just a different kind of experience, or like what?
It's totally different in that.
I think I'm surprised that you're surprised. So I'm wondering what is surprising you, you know?
Because so for RE4 is a game that I've already played and enjoyed, right? Like in its 2D third person form. And so like, especially seeing the run up to it coming out, it's like, okay, well, cutscenes are all 2D because they kind of have to be, right? But that's like, okay, that's kind of a bummer. That's kind of taking you out of it. Like ladders and stuff, you know, you're not climbing up ladders, and there's things like that where I'm like, okay, well, is this gonna just be like the shooting part? It's gonna feel like the Wii version of the game or something like that. Is it just gonna be that? Like, but like I wasn't thinking, you know, about like the codec, I'll just call them the codec scenes, like we're talking with Hunnigan, all of those story things. Yeah, you have like a cell phone. And you're just like looking at it, and even just that is like really cool. Like it's the same thing delivered in the way that the game actually would have been in real life. But more than that, like I wasn't realizing seeing those same spaces that you've seen before in another game, but for the first time being inside them, like really in them, and how different and cool and amazing that is, right? Like that first village, which I know like the back of my hand, like the roof of it here and everything like that. I didn't know that from playing the first game, but actually being in it and being like, oh yeah, okay, yeah, that church tower is tall. Like that's what this really would look like. It's just this like really, really, it's like being in a theme park of exactly what the game it was that you like know and love. And sorry Alex, I promise I'll let you talk. Let me get this last thing out,
please.
So the woman early on in the game, there's one of the villagers is like stuck to the wall with like a pitchfork, and actually they changed the line there because it was like it was something vaguely like oddly sexist, like guess there's like no discrimination here or something like that. And they changed it to like, oh, nobody's safe or whatever. But so that scene, which is kind of like, oh, okay, that's like background window dressing in the normal game. Seeing that in person is kind of like, holy shit. Like that's a pitchfork stuck through a person's face and they're stuck to the wall and they're bleeding. And even though the textures are not, you know, it's not totally redone and it still looks like it looks and it has the more limited, like, color palette, it's up-resed and whatever. But, like, seeing stuff like that in person or the signs that have human skulls attached to them that are just kind of like, ah, you don't even really notice them in the normal game. Like, when that's like a fucking skull-sized skull and it's there and it's covered in blood and it's dangling from something, it's kind of like, oh, yeah, well, this is a little, like, unsettling, like to my like lizard brain that's not thinking about it, it's just reacting to it. Like, I don't know, Alex, have you had any kind of similar?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, if I had to describe the biggest difference between RE4 VR and RE7 VR, it's that RE7 is very much focused on what you're looking at. Like, the actual gameplay doesn't change that much. Like, you still have to play with the controller. So it's kind of in your face with all the different, you know, scary things you see in RE7, but with RE4, you're very much, you know, the visuals are just as impactful, I would say, like Mark described, but it's all about what you're doing in that world with your own body, like with your own arms. Mm-hmm. And the combat kind of figures into that as well. Whereas with RE7, you're just kind of looking at all the VR, if mm-hmm. that makes sense. Mm-hmm. There isn't comparatively a lot of interactivity compared to RE4. And I think that kind of misled me going into RE4 because I was thinking it'd be just like RE7, but in first person.
A big difference too is the controls now, they know that you have this 6-degree like touch controllers. With RE7, they couldn't do that. So for example, like the shotgun, like you shoot the shotgun, you actually like reload the shotgun, like that feeling and just doing that where like zombies are chasing you around and stuff like that is like very powerful. Reloading your gun and actually you put in the clip and then cock it back is like just it changes everything. Like, it really does feel really different.
And you can dual wield weapons too, actually. So you can have like the knife in one hand and you can have the gun in the other, and you can kind of strategically fight, you know, with both weapons, which is obviously something you've never been able to do in a Resident Evil game. So it's kind of weird, to be honest. I do think that the interactivity, like with the environment, can be a bit overdone because sometimes it doesn't work as seamlessly as it should, especially like if you see an item on the ground, you know, you try to pick it up, you might accidentally grab your handgun because it's pretty close on your hips or the shotgun. And this is kind of embarrassing for someone like me, but like, I haven't been able to kill the chainsaw guy because I haven't been able to like strategize shooting him with a shotgun and being able to reload without.
You should be ashamed of yourself.
I should, but at the same time, I guess.
How dare you?
You know,
you're like learning an entirely new sport here. This is a completely different category. And also, I would like to ask a question.
Yes,
I saw a video on Twitter of somebody, you know, there's the items up in the trees. I don't know if there's
awesome. This is the best.
How do you say it? How do you say it?
Spinel?
The jewels, right? The spinel.
Yeah.
Somebody listening to this is screaming at me right now what the correct pronunciation is.
Spinal! Why don't you know it's spinal?
Your knowledge. Yeah. But I saw a video where someone just trots down under a tree and shoots one down and then just fucking catches it with their hand.
I saw the same video and I do it every single time now.
How
I do it
It's so fun.
It's so fucking fun and but easy to do.
You talk about the difference between this one and 7. It really sounds like it's the difference between something that was being developed as a game and also as VR at the same time versus something that like this is 100%. They made this for the VR experience, right? Like, this game has existed and they took it and said, all right, we're going to VR the shit out of this.
It's really, I mean, it's the difference between having like the motion controls for everything and for aiming, like but there's also aspects to RE4 that were not designed around having VR, obviously, but work better in VR than even they were originally designed. Like, so for example, like the extra fidelity aiming, of course you could always aim, but like for the guys who throw the dynamite, like shooting the dynamite out of their hands and having it blow up on them is much more of a thing when you're actually like can sit in there and aim. Or like the doors, you know, you can shoot holes in doors in the game and you can shoot zombies through the doors, or you could even throw grenades through the door. I would never think to throw a grenade through the door, but in the VR RE4, you could shoot a hole in the door, take a grenade, put it out the hole in the door, drop it, and boom, fucking blow them up. It's like, it just works. And it's like, wait, will this work? Can I just do this? And it's like, holy shit, that actually worked. The example that you're talking about with catching the spindle, like even really base normal ass interactions, like picking up notes in Resident Evil. This is actually one thing I think they missed out on. And I don't know why. So you pick up a note and you can actually like hold it up to your face, and the resolution's really good. You could read it if they would have written what is supposed to be written on the note, but they don't. So you have to hit a button and then it says like in text on it, but it's like, look, I can look at this thing and see that you had to put this like fake bunch of, it would be perhaps, so powerful if you literally picked it up and just read it. Yeah.
Right. That was a localization limitation, because you'd have to remake that for every single area.
But I think they probably did that. They do that in Village. I think it was Village. You can just read them right off the actual assets, right? I believe one of those recent games.
I think they did do something like that. I think they did have that in Village.
That's a bummer. But, yeah, that is a total VR thing that would have made sense. I just want to ask a question too, like just to kind of step back a second, Alex. I'm sure you know a lot about this. Maybe you do too, Mark. But like, why does this exist? Like, this was like Oculus kind of. Are they publishing this themselves, or did Capcom have anything to do with this, basically, or
creatively? No, it was developed by Armature.
Right, I know Armature developers who've made a bunch of games, like did the actual coding and stuff, but like who produced this and directed it and decided all this stuff?
It was Oculus. Oculus going to Capcom and saying, "Hey, let's make a deal for RE4 and then Armature, being the developers who did it. I'm sure they saw the hype around 7 and how much people loved it. And it's like, okay, what can we do to actually move the needle? Let's do an R Resident Evil game. What's the best RE game? I can see them, if they did this, Alex, or something like this for like remake, or something like that. Obviously it's a way harder, it's not 3D, so they'd have to really like roll up their sleeves and basically make a whole new game. But like, I think a lot of stuff has been done to this game. What we were talking about with Ocarina of Time, like looking up at the trees and being able to kind of see all of the weird stitches that you just wouldn't be able to in the quote unquote 2D version of the game.
Right.
They did a lot of work, and some of it is invisible and some of it's not. But even like, for example, your inventory, right? The playing like inventory Tetris, like you could in RE4, you can still do that. And you grab the pieces and you can turn them just in your hand and put them back. It just works kind of how you feel like you would do it. And it's incredibly satisfying. It's even more satisfying. The merchant, they had to make, when you talk to the merchant, all those menus are totally different. How it looks, how it behaves is different. They put a lot of work into the interface. Like I said, the puzzles are like adjusted in a way so that they are actually like meaningful to be interacting with them in VR. And I've only done a couple of them so far. I've seen another couple in videos, but like the ones that I've seen are really well done. Like that first kind of sundial puzzle behind the church.
It'd been so long.
I forgot about how that puzzle worked.
It's just like you spin it and the degrees, it moves like 25 degrees each time, but here it's like fully manipulatable. Right. And you have to set it in place with both hands.
Yeah, they're pushing buttons. There's two buttons and you push one or the other. And even seeing the merchant in real life, it's like, oh yeah, like this guy would be like about this tall, and like his face is fucking scary as shit. Like he's not like a normal looking dude. Like you're like, this is kind of creepy. It has a vibe here. Or there's a scene, Alex, I'm sure you would remember, it's still early in the game, so not really a spoiler, but right after you meet, it's Luis, right?
Luis, yeah.
So, and you get separated again, and you're in like a camp that is high up in like some canyon. And there's like wind blowing and, you know, there's some things in the normal game where there's like flags blowing and you're supposed to get the sense that you're kind of like high up on these cliffs, but you never really feel that exactly. So much in a 2D game. In this game, it's like, oh fuck, I am up here on like high cliffs walking on little rope ladders and little like suspension bridges. You hear the wind, you're like, I cannot fall off this fucking thing because I'm really high up. Like your whole brain, it felt like a totally different location. And I know that location really well. And I know like from the concept art and probably the person who made the level, they saw it that way. But I don't think too many of the players really felt it that way. In this game, you feel it that way. And that is like a really just like amazing feeling. I just can't recommend it enough. Like
this seems like a really smart way for Oculus as the platform kind of holder and who's, you know, it's in their best interest to kind of broaden the platform. And this is a great way to do it. Like take their expertise and their money. I mean, they've got Facebook money, right? Basically I hope they're doing more of this. I want to see them, you know, cherry pick games and then turn them into, it's really smart. It's kind of a weird association to make, but it kind of reminds me, and this is because I'm old, but it reminds me of like Sega way back in the day when Sega, like the way Sega participated to fight against Nintendo was they would just take everybody else's games and program them themselves and put them on Sega, right? Like almost every third party game was actually programmed by Sega. And it's like Oculus should do that. Like find the games that would be perfect for VR, fund them, develop them and, you know, use their expertise to make them awesome. That's just brilliant. I hope they do more of it. They haven't announced more games like this, have they yet? Like,
I'm trying to remember. I thought I had heard, I'd heard that this was a thing where they're like, okay, what can really like move the needle? And Resident Evil is like one of those games. Like, what could we do? Like, I'm trying to think what other games I would want to see done in VR. Obra Dinn was always one where I always say that to Lucas, like, dude, this game would be so amazing in VR. But I'm sure, I mean, they did Doom. Who did Doom? I think Sony might have done a similar thing with Doom 3.
That's right. I remember that.
And that's what Sony did with Skyrim, what you just described, though,
that's
John.
True.
I think, yeah. Like, yeah. And so...
Both
I definitely
should be doing that, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. This is, and even though, like I said, there are some awkward bits, the fact that the cutscenes, it really does, to me, at least, Alex, I don't know about you, but it does take me out of it. But it's like, what could they have done? There's nothing they could have done. But like, it's just a bummer where those scenes that are so like, I mean, that's where the action really gets heightened. And it's like, oh, okay, now I'm back in the real world. Now I'm back in like video game land. But not enough to really still detract from the
In the beginning of the village, when that boulder falls, is it third person when you're in the QuickTime event, or are you like, can you turn around?
You can choose, I think.
Well, no, you can choose to not have to do like the QuickTime events, but basically it's a movie. It shows a movie like when zombies grab you, it shows a movie of you getting grabbed by the zombie and you have to shake the controllers and then it will show, you know, it's still in the movie of you kicking the zombie. So it's going into third person like that from time to time, which honestly does take you out of it. Again, I don't know that there was a better way to go about it, but like that's a big difference from 7. You know, 7, like there were a couple cutscenes that were shown video, but like the cutscenes happened around you in 7, whereas
even after two or three roundhouses in first person view from Leon, that can be instant. Whoa, I got to sit down and pause the game.
Well, on that, when we were talking about like, what games would we like to see revisited in VR? And I'm sitting here by myself thinking everyone would need to literally wear a seatbelt, but imagine just the original Portal in VR.
Oh
yeah. Geez.
Like
yes.
Think about how much fun that would be.
Totally.
That would just be, and you can like look around, you know, you're going through an infinite loop. You could just look around and see what that looks like.
That would
somebody needs to
sick,
fake
yeah.
that. That's what I was going to say. It should come with a barf bucket. Like that was the thing that I would have to, but yeah, how amazing. Like the levels when you were actually like flying through and bouncing and jumping some of the Portal 2 things.
I take it back. I know what I want to see revisited in VR.
All right.
Shadowgate 64. Shadowgate 64 in VR. Somebody call me. Did any of you guys play that?
I only played the original Shadowgate. I did not play 64.
No. Okay.
I forgot there was a Shadowgate 64. It's a very deep cut. Yeah.
I feel like it's one of those games that like 12 people played, but the people who played it were all like, fuck yeah, Shadowgate 64.
Well, no, now that you say that, though, I mean, it's essentially a dungeon crawler, right? I mean, I would love to see like an actual good VR, like wizardry game or something where you're actually in the dungeons and fighting stuff. You know, that would
be
amazing.
It's very low key. There's no action whatsoever. Everything is, you know, interact, and then the item sort of floats towards you in space. And then it's, you know, will you eat the meat? Yes, no. It could be great. Oh, there's a series of color items where one of the colors gives you vertigo and it makes all of your vision like swirly and loopy and weird, and you just kind of have to deal with it until it wears off.
Touch fuzzy, get dizzy.
Exactly.
That sounds out of this world. I would want Shenmue on VR. I know that's a bit of a hot take.
All right.
Yo,
I want to open drawers with the Oculus controller.
Can you read Chinese?
All right. So, Alex, any comments or things that we missed that you feel like I'm way hotter on it than I thought, way enjoying it more. I've forgotten more of the game, too, than I thought I had. And so, like, I was like, oh, yeah, wait, you go through this tunnel. Again, seeing these places, you know, I'm really excited to see the second half of the game. It doesn't have a lot of the mini games. It doesn't have
the extra modes, the mercenaries.
Like, yeah, bells and whistles. But like, even still, like, I feel like this is like an important game for VR in general. And like, if you're a Quest owner, I like can't recommend it enough.
I think it sets a lot of interesting precedents for VR going forward, because I was skeptical about a lot of the stuff that I think RE4 VR does really well. And I'm really impressed. I do think it might be better to take VR with a slower paced Resident Evil game. Like, I think Revelations would have been a much better game for this kind of thing, because it's intensive, the action. And, you know, if you're a better fit for the VR experience itself, because I think, you know, like I said, fighting the chainsaw guy, it's super intense. And I think this requires a very high level of skill in action games, even on easy mode, which I'm playing.
Okay, I was going to ask if you were playing it on easy or normal.
Yeah, it's the learning. Places. It's the learning curve. And easy is not a walk in the park either. So you can definitely die if you're careless.
It's interesting, though. I actually found it easier than I think the normal game. I know what you're talking about getting used to pulling your gun. There's an alternate control system, we should say, too, which is much more typical gamey, where you can toggle between weapons with like just the your thumbstick and stuff. But I was, because of the increased fidelity, I always felt like kind of like playing a Metal Gear, the Twin Snakes, and I was worried, okay, this game was not designed for this, so it's going to be too easy. I haven't found that so far. You know, the Twin Snakes had boss fights and stuff. You could go into first person and it just like broke it. So far with this game, I haven't had that problem. It's been a little easier, I felt like, than the typical game, but,
you just get a lot of headshots out and
every shot almost is a headshot pretty much. Or you can really like kneecap guys if you want to like have them block people, or like I was saying, shoot the dynamite out of their hands or whatever.
Mark, are you playing in standing mode or sitting mode?
Sitting.
Okay, I think there's a very big difference actually between sitting and standing, and I think it's actually better when you're standing. I've tried both, and sitting, I feel like it makes it a pain in the ass to like grab items from the floor or to do things like freeing the dog from the bear trap.
That the freeing the dog was a problem. That was a problem. Grabbing items, they float up. If you get used to, you get close to them, they fly up and you just grab them. But it takes a little getting used to. Well, let's talk about some other stuff, because I do want to talk about other stuff. But yeah, so overall, Alex, like what's your overall like?
I mean, I still have to play the rest, but I think I'm sold on VR now, because I've been very skeptical of it, you know, for a while, and I still do have a lot of concerns, but I think this kind of goes a long way toward at least appealing to me personally. right? Because, you know, after I beat RE7 VR once, I never really wanted to go back to it. But mm-hmm. I think with RE4 VR, you know, if I can get over the hurdles that I have with it, I would definitely want to mix things up and play it in this mode from time to time.
Cool. Yeah. Only being able to play a half hour at a time is probably one of the differences too. I had that when I first started playing 7. I could only play a half hour at a time, 2-3 times, and then I played for like 5-hour, 6-hour stretches. But this one, I've been fine. But I do a lot more stuff in VR. Obviously, I think you have like VR legs that you can get used to stuff. I will say, like we talked about, the options are robust. So like you can teleport if you want to. You can walk. Is how I'm playing it. It's got the turning anyway.
Very quick question before we put a bow on it. Mm-hmm. So Resident Evil 7 is very much like visceral, I'm gonna pee my pants horror, right? Like it's some scary shit. Mm. Resident Evil 4, not so much. It's a little more silly. Yeah.
Action movie. Yeah, it's got some silly shit too.
Yeah, it's less like I wanna nope the fuck out and more like, woo, what's going on? Hee hee hee. In VR, does that feel more frightening? Like is there a difference there?
So now I know why a lot of people die during like zombie outbreaks. Because actually when you're actually being swarmed from all sides, even if you have a weapon, like there's no guarantee you're in the right state of mind to reload your weapon in the correct manner, and then you end up getting decapitated by chainsaw asshole because you know your shotgun wasn't loaded. And that's the feeling that I got. Like I felt very helpless in a different way than RE7, right? RE7, the system is kind of designed to make you weak, but in RE4 VR, you know, I think my friend was in the army, my friend who played RE4 VR, and he was in the army before, and I think he had a lot easier time managing all the different weapons, and that can be down to his personal training. So
it's much harder to keep track of. Yes, the answer is yes, Tina. It's much scarier. The parts that are scary or were already kind of scary and disturbing are much scarier. And like Alex is saying, like it's really hard to even just keep track of number of bullets when people are like coming out, you're just like, bah, 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 and you're just like, wait, why is it not working? Oh, like, whereas, you know, it's easier to separate. Okay, I'm going to shoot 3 times, reload, shoot 3-5 times, reload. A lot of times, even still, also because you have to like think through the, okay, to reload, I need to grab my bullets. I need to put it in the gun. I need to cock the gun. Like if that's not automatic, like you just kind of start panicking. And you can just like run and stuff like that. So yes,
versus
it definitely
in like a standard gameplay, it's just sort of the same button sequence no matter what you've got equipped, right?
Yeah, exactly. I remember the first time I went to a shooting range, just learning how actually hard it is to reload a gun.
Oh yes,
you have no idea what you're doing.
Right. Yeah. Try doing that when like people are like in front of and behind you want to eat your face off. it definitely. But you, I feel myself already starting to get used to that action. And like even the shotgun, I like shoot somebody and then I'm like, wait, why is it not working? I start to run away and it's like, oh duh, you need to fucking cock the shotgun again. But it's all, you know, it's part of the cool, it's part of what I'm really loving about it there. So should we check in on Dread? More people have played more of it since we talked last time. John, you finished it, I think.
I did, yeah. Yeah, it was great. I loved it. I don't know.
I think I'm about halfway through it now.
Oh, yeah.
I don't like the Emmys.
I hate them.
I think it's a bad part of the game. I'm not saying
you're going to like them even less than if you don't like them now.
Really?
Yeah.
That's already happening. I thought it was just going to get better and better, and now I'm at like the third or fourth, and I'm like, I like them less. Fuck, this is way more annoying. It's just getting more and more annoying.
I mean, you have to essentially, it's not a spoiler. I mean, you essentially have to just figure, it's a pattern. It's a situation where you have to figure out the pattern and then execute on that. The last couple were just like, when I started, I was like, I am never going to do this. But that's the thing I like about this game. Every time something challenging comes at you, every time you do it, you feel yourself getting better at it. And then by the end, you're like a wizard ninja badass who can like do it blindfolded.
The bosses still have just been, I did a couple bosses more bosses.
Great. Yeah.
Really satisfying. Felt fair the whole time. Everything we said about the bosses last time, still feeling that way. I just like, I was kind of like, I'm surprised people haven't been harsher in reviews and everything towards the Emmys, because I feel like it's just not fun, good game design.
God, like I was,
oh, I like it.
I was infuriated at the second one. Like I couldn't figure out how to get away from him. And so in San Francisco, I had dinner with Imran Khan from Fanbyte. And I was like, I don't know how to do this. Can you do it? And I handed him my Switch and he managed to get away from the second Emmy.
Cheating. Oh,
but like, I'm now dreading like the other ones.
Hey, he said the name of the game in his
house.
Pun intended, but yeah.
Hudla.
Yeah, I get it. It's frustrating, but I'm enjoying it. I'm seeing it as like, you know, a challenge to sort of figure out and get through, and then like, you know, feel really good about after the end.
And the stakes are so low for the Emmys. Like, it puts you right where you enter the room. So like, just
it does. Book it. But it's not fun doing that.
Fun though. Like getting it, like running and like, okay, I got to slide. Okay, I got to do this. I got to do that. I got to get around him here. I got to go invisible here so he can't see me. I got to do this, that, and the other thing. Like figuring those out as you go. I think it's fun. I mean, I totally get it though. I can completely also see how I would go the entire other direction and be like, this sucks. And there were a couple times where I was like pretty mad at the game, but I never so much that I was like, I always felt like it's not the game being unfair to me. It's just kind of me not being good enough yet. And so, you know, fortunately it's not a big part of the game. I mean, yeah, it's a recurring theme in the game, but I mean, there's
it
not
seems
that
like it's getting
them.
To be more, it's taking up more time, at least anyway, as I'm playing, which is what I'm kind of not, because other than that, like I'm really enjoying all the other aspects of what we talked about. So
yeah, it was fun. I have to go back and get like 95% items at the end. So
Nice.
I'm all done. 100% baby.
Five. Well, I talked about this a bit online, but I mean, the last 5%, I'm pretty sure I know where they are. But I cannot get them without looking it up. Like there's stuff you have to do in this game that they don't teach you how to do, and like it's like if you don't figure
it
out.
Did you look it up, Gabe?
Yeah, I hit my like it's been 30 minutes and I'm not having fun. Screw this.
I don't think it's possible to get 100% in this game without looking some of the stuff up, because they literally don't teach you how to do some of the moves. Like
Super
Metroid was that way.
Super Metroid was that way, but you could watch the demo reel or whatever at the start of the game and at least see what you can do, and then it's a matter of this doesn't teach you some of the things that you need to learn how to do. Literally does not tell you how to do it. You have to figure it out by trial and error. So
I guess
it is possible, but no. You don't understand. If you saw the shit that I can't believe some of the stuff I've done in this game. I was like, if you saw me do this shit, you would think I was like a pro gamer or something. Like it's ridiculous, the kind of like pinpoint accuracy, like flipping and sliding and doing this at the right moment and shooting through this and that.
No, I understand that it's not easy. Like, I get that it's difficult, but don't you pine for the times when games were kind of mean to you and like didn't tell you everything, and when you finally figure it out, you're like, these motherfuckers. But it feels great.
To be fair though, I think they've never done it like this. I don't remember a game that I enjoyed as much as this, where they literally didn't tell you how to do stuff. I don't think it's fair. I think they should.
Well, Metroid 1, I mean, some people are talking about that, right? Like, but Metroid 1 was pretty harsh and unforgiving in that way, where it's like, okay, well, wait, no one ever told me that there could just be like a wall that I could, you know, walk through or have to shoot or bomb or whatever. Like, I mean, I this sounds like it's maybe a little different, but this in the same vein of like that there's this really harsh.
Well, because what I'm thinking of when I'm saying this is like I've never played a Metroid game, but there's one specific thing in Super Metroid that even I'm aware of that is like they never tell you can do this. You just kind of have to figure it out or you're never going to make any progress. But it's like a logical, neat thing. Can I say what it is? Can it's I spoil it?
Are you going to spoil Super Metroid?
I'm going to spoil Super Metroid, everybody.
All right, go for it. Yes.
You're in like a glass tube, and you have to think to break out of the glass tube.
Right.
That's Use fucking cool.
It is, but that makes sense with the items at hand that you have been given that you would experiment with. But I'm talking about things where like you got to do a move off a wall, for example. Let's just say I'm being vague because that's not exactly it, but like that you wouldn't even know you could do because you've never been why would you do that? Like, you know what I mean? Like that sort of thing. So
it's
a little like much, but I'm glad, you know, I'm going to look it up because I do want to get the 100%. So I'm happy I got to 95 on my own. I feel proud, but
I had to look up Dungeon Encounters. I was almost called it Dungeon Explorers, which would be a TurboGrafx even better game or something, remake of that game. Yeah. That'd be awesome. Dungeon Encounters. I don't think I'd ever seen or heard of or whatever. So do you want to like brief people on what the hell that is first?
That came out of nowhere, right? They just announced it like a month or so before it even came out. It's a really hard game to explain because it looks very simple on the surface. If you look at it, it almost looks like, you know, like a dice rolling, you know, super basic, like, map making game with like no real, there's little graphics, but there's not much. You're literally walking around like a board almost and filling in map pieces and touching squares that have events connected to them, like battles and things like that. And you're fighting enemies and growing your party and trying to get deeper down this dungeon. Basically,
it looks really like a prototype level. Almost even like when you're saying there's not really graphics, it's like, it looks like graph paper. It looks like, you're walking on a graph paper with numbers and you have like an animated character. But then even when you get into quote unquote combat, it's just like still pictures and numbers and stuff. Right.
Yep. Basically. Yeah. And, it's by, what's his name? Ito, who's like a really big name in, Square Enix history. I'm forgetting his first name. Was it Hiroshi or something?
Hiroyuki?
But, you know, I'll look it up. But yeah, he's been, you know, he was very big in Square for a long time and then kind of disappeared for a while. And, you know, suddenly he's back working on this game. And it's oddly compelling. Like, I did not go into it with super high expectations, but I was very curious about it because of the pedigree of the people who worked on it. You know, Uematsu from Final Fantasy does the music. But yeah, you're essentially just mapping out a dungeon and it's hard as balls because, like, you know, if your character, for example, so every square on the map has a coordinates, right? Like X and Y coordinates. And let's say that you, so what happened to me the first time I was doing really well for a while, I got to like level 8 or 9 or 10 or something like that down the dungeon. And then someone petrified one of my characters. That's it. That character is stone and is stuck on that block and you got to let him go. And like
forever.
You can then, until you get to, for example, a place that can cure petrification, and then you have to remember and tell them the coordinates of where they got left off, and then you can fix them. It's pretty hardcore in that manner. Or like if they die, I think you can like I only die like I lost my party once and then I didn't go back and play again yet, so I don't remember. But I remember reading about it. I don't know exactly what happens, but I think you have to like kind of go back to their spot. You have like backup players you can use, but once you're out of them, the game's over. Like you can't, you know, you have like a crew of like, I forget how many people that you can choose from. And so like I made my party of 4 characters. And you know, you're growing as you go down the you defeat enemies, you might pick up like better weapons and better magic spells. And battle is interesting because enemies have physical defense and magical defense. And like, you got to take down one or the other before you can take off their HP. So like, let's say an enemy has 50 PD and 50 MD. And they're going to be stronger or weaker against certain things. But let's say you know that this guy is weak against magic, and so you use your magic attacks to get their MD down to 0. Then you can attack them only with magic to lower their HP until they die. And so it's kind of a strategic, and it's active time battle like the Final Fantasy game. So like they have a gauge that's growing, and so you're kind of monitoring who's going to be attacking next, how much defense do they have left, you know, what weapons and gear do I have that I can, you know, maybe do something to take them down. It's interesting. It's really like
it looks like the cast.
It's a numbers game.
Yeah, pretty varied. Like there's people who look like they're dressed in fantasy stuff. People modern day, futuristic people. There's a dog with a sword. There's a Totoro, like it's just a straight up fucking Totoro that's supposedly a cat. But like, it looks like a little bit of like whimsy. I mean, parts of it look like serious, like a high fantasy, and then parts of it just seem kind of like, okay, maybe it's not taking itself too seriously. Is there like a story to this too that you're going through, or
you know, there was, but I read it when I started, but I quickly forgot because you're not playing for the story, right? It's extremely satisfying to walk around that grid and fill in the map pieces because as you step on them, it the color fills in. It's almost like a coloring book. And you know, if you hit every square on a floor, you'll get a bonus ability point. If you, every time you hit like certain milestones, like, I don't know, you've filled in 3,000 blocks, you might get some points. And so it's a very like, just as soon as you get to a new floor, you're like, ooh, all this unexplored space, all this vast, you know, land before me, which is literally just a bunch of blocks, but it feels great to run through the blocks and like the little sound effect and like fill them in and stuff. And so it's tickling these, like, it kind of reminds me of the sort of game that I think would have appealed to, like, say, D&D fans or Wizardry fans, or games who, you know, where you kind of like had board games with your imagination.
To me, is what it looks like. It looks like a board game. It looks like he had an idea for a board game, and this is just, a video game ass board game is kind of what it seems like to me.
And you know,
so do you like it? Are you enjoying it? You're gonna keep playing it?
I like it, except that it's also a bit obtuse in the sense that once I died, it wasn't super clear to me. Like, I knew I had to pick new guys, but there's literally only three people remaining that I could pick, so I couldn't even make a full party again. And I was like, wait, I didn't choose. A bunch of other people were already dead. I don't know why they're already dead. I didn't kill them. I don't know how the game chooses who's living or not. Like, it's almost the kind of game where, like old school games, I kind of wish it came with a manual, and I would just sit down and read the manual and then go back and give it another shot. So that's kind of where I'm at now, but I'm going to do that.
So it's on PS4, Switch, and Steam. Where are you playing it?
I'm playing on PS5. Playing the PS4 version on PS5. Yeah, but it's Hiro. That's right. It was Hiroyuki Ito who, you know, worked, I think, on like Final Fantasy 12.
He's a director of 6 and 12. Yeah.
Yeah, he worked on some pretty big Final Fantasy games, and
I think Tactics was it?
He worked on Tactics in some degree. Yeah. And, you know, he's just been sort of in the background for a while. So for him to pop back out again, I was immediately interested. But it's, you know, there's some downsides too. Like, there's no real music during gameplay. Like, when you're walking around and stuff, there's music for battles, but the map doesn't really have music, which is a weird thing when you're spending all this time walking around exploring a map. That said, Apple Music came out on PS5 today, so maybe that will solve that problem.
You're just going to play Final Fantasy music in the background?
Yeah, I'll just play my own music in the background, exactly.
I have a very specific question. So you said that enemies have physical defense and magic defense, and you break down one or the other, and then you can cause actual damage by breaking through that. So are there enemies that are like, you know, they've got 80 magic defense and only 20 physical defense? Like, do enemies have tendencies in that way? Are there enemies that are 100% one of the, like, could you just have a party full of like magic heavy hitters and say, screw physical defense, I don't care?
The problem is, and again, I'm going purely by what I learned through playing, because maybe there is a manual, but I haven't read it. So like the way I see it is that there are, but the problem is they have different levels of defense. And so even if someone comes in with like MD of like only 10 or something, it could be that they're just also very strong against magic, so your magic attacks aren't going to do as much damage potentially.
I recently saw
some enemies that were airborne, and none of my attacks worked until I only magic worked, or like some monster dropped a bow, and then once I had the bow, I was able to attack airborne enemies. And so there's, you know, things like that come into play as well, that again, if they are explained somewhere, I haven't seen a real clear explanation, so I'm kind of figuring out as I go.
Okay. Which
also feels old school, right?
It seems to be the just looking at the website, it seems like it's really leaning into the like the tagline is think, period. It seems to be saying like that you need to like really be using tons of strategy and a lot of deep thinking. Like, is that mesh with deep your learning. Experience, or is it like, it's obviously not about the visuals. And there's not even like music for part of it. So is it just like a pure kind of thinking board gamey kind of thing? Enjoyable on that level?
I mean, yeah. I mean, not too much. I'm not sitting there like strategizing every single move. But it does. As I was starting, like, I feel like when I lost my party finally, I was just starting to get into like the where you have to kind of think a little more about each move you're going to make, because the enemies vary and what they can do and stuff. So in that sense, yes, but not like, I'm not sitting there like, you know,
okay, you're not, it's not
doing
like
math, like it's not
chess
like the math.
Match or something.
Okay. Right. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Interesting.
But it's cool. It's very different. If nothing else, you've probably not played a game like this. So in that sense, I think it's worth taking a look at it.
Okay. Why don't we shift from there and go into the news? Now, Gabe, is our new news theme song. It's prepped. Yeah, it's prepped. It's ready.
So the cast here is going to hear it through my phone. Listeners, it will be edited in, but we'll keep the reactions all the same. So is that good?
I guess we're good. I was thinking maybe we could save this for episode 300, but maybe we should test it.
We need to test it out before we get there. Yeah.
We should test it out, and we'll just then when episode 300 happens, it'll just be very natural, and everyone can just be like,
fine tune it, iron out the kinks.
All right, give me a cue.
All right, so let me actually find the news here. Let's get into it with Gabe the news.
News.
All right. Starting off with the state of play today.
Mark, did you direct that news? Did you tell Gabe exactly what to do there? Because it sure sounds like it came from your head.
It was a project we worked on together.
Collab.
Took some iterations, but I'm pretty happy with where
I'm at. I'm so pissed, but also super impressed, because I'm like, what are they going to do? I don't know what to do with this. God damn it.
So State of Play is back. We had, 24 hours notice. They teased and ended with the only thing they really promised. They said it was going to be shorter. It was a little over 20 minutes. They teased Little Devil Inside, which is what they showed was the bulk of it.
I think they closed with it, right?
That's right. That's what I mean. Which looks still crazy and ambitious and beautiful. And seems like it's a lot of different types of game all in one. But I love the art style. And
I do too. It looks really, really neat. The art style is cool.
I'm really curious how that plays. There's lots of different types of gameplay in there. And the story seems really kind of not your typical thing.
This is one of the ones where I just want to be don't rush it, you guys. Put it out whenever you're ready.
Well, I feel like they're not, right? Because wasn't this one of the games that was in that first, one of the first PlayStation 5 things, right? I don't remember what it was anymore.
It was in that reveal event last summer.
A long time ago. And we haven't really seen it since.
Yeah. So did they say, this summary doesn't say, what did they say? Did they give a date for it? It's now PS4. I guess it probably always was PS4 and PS5. At least it's the PS5 thing. But
I don't remember a date when I watched the video. So.
Okay. They did give a date for John. I know you're psyched. Star Ocean, the Divine Force. Boom. 2022, nowhere, huh? Baby. Yeah. They're still making those. They're still making those.
I'm happy that Tri-Ace is still around. It's good. You know, Tri-Ace is one of the elder JRPG developers that sort of, I don't know, maybe they've fallen off a bit in recent years, but, gone are the days of Valkyrie, profile and stuff, but I'm glad it's around. I'm glad they're around. What's up with that hair, man? The hair on those characters.
Hair came out
2002.
Some of the tech of the actual gameplay and stuff looked, more recent and modern. It looked almost like a Xenosaga-y, just big open vistas and boosting around in it. But the cutscenes and the characters looked like they walked out of exactly 100 other games. Wow, you're really just straight going for this shit. Is this supposed to be a nostalgia play? Because this looks like some shit that's been done before.
Yeah, it's very much that
many times
PS2 porcelain doll look that was in for a couple weeks, a couple months. I don't know, but I don't really care for that, to be honest, but I will say the gameplay does look interesting. And Xenoblade Chronicles was what the one we worked on, actually, Xenoblade Chronicles X, where you've got kind of open world exploration and battles that take place right there on the map, and the flying around stuff looks interesting. I don't know how free that's going to be throughout the game, but exploration looks like it'll be fun. So
you don't have enough time to play this game, though. You're not going to play this game, are you?
I'm going to try it. I tried them all.
Really?
I couldn't get into Star Ocean 5. I played it a bunch in like maybe 4 or 5 hours and I kind of gave up, but I'll definitely give it a shot. I used to really be a big Star Ocean fan. And you know, I'm always kind of hoping that this next one's going to be the one that sort of brings it back, you know? So
yeah,
I'm glad it exists and I'm glad Trice is still kicking.
Let It Die. They did not let die. It's like, this is saying like a 3D MOBA question mark. I didn't see any kind of MOBA to it. I just took it as the same weird, whatever it was in the first place. Now coming to PS4 and PS5, spring 2022. That's done by Gung Ho, but not Grasshopper, right? Somebody else.
Wonder if that's related to Grasshopper. Just got announced. They got bought by I forgot the already. NetEase.
Oh, NetEase. Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. NetEase.
Suda and Nagoshi in the same company.
Well, Nagoshi's not confirmed yet. He's just rumored. So.
Oh.
But yeah.
Oh, interesting. I thought that was reported.
It was reported by the same guy who reported that the Switch was going to have 4K and all that stuff.
Let's
wait and see. No, it sounds like it's probable, but it's not official yet.
We are OFK from a friend of the show, Teddy Deef and company, coming to PS4 and PS5. 2022 now. Let's see, no other date on that. But yeah, it's going to be a 5-episode thing now, a song at the end of every episode. It seems like a cool, new, weird kind of
trying something different
kind of thing. Yeah, that there's like interactive, there's like some interactive dialogue and texting, but that's like the interaction to it. It's not like a 3D action game or anything like that. Bugsnax. Tina, you're so hyped for Big Snacks.
Messing up.
The Isle of Big Snacks.
Come to Snack Tooth Island and discover.
Hats.
It's Bugsnax.
Hot decorating. It seems like they're leaning into Bugsnax as like less Pokemon and more Animal Crossing with this.
I'm not mad at it. I get more fully voiced dialogue from incredible talents. I was delighted that Triphany was featured prominently in the trailer, because you know, at the bottom of the ocean, she's my favorite. Super excited about it. Mm-hmm.
Does this mean that this cast to take place before the ending of?
So Bugsnax? I've been thinking about that. It must be pre end game,
right?
But
our lore. We have to keep our Bugsnax lore straight.
But I'm very excited.
Really cool.
And super hyped to see that it was a free. I was fully expecting, like, I'm going to pay you money for this. I would have happily paid money for it, but don't tell them that, I guess.
Especially since they gave the game away as a PS Plus game for PS5 when it came out. Like, that would make a lot of sense if there was some kind of microtransaction to it. Maybe it's coming to other platforms, and that's why they're doing it. Who knows? But
I am delighted either way. Can't wait.
There you go. 2022. That's the only date I guess they gave for that. Five Nights at Freddy's Security Breach. Gabe, you're so excited for December 16th, 2021, to pilot a robot or
is
thing.
That,
I don't know.
Is that on Quest? Because that sounds like a VR experience.
Death's Door. Coming to PlayStation. Finally, a lot of people are excited about that. A lot of people were talking about that when it came out on Xbox, November 23rd. So really soon, PS4 and PS5.
That looks cool. I didn't realize it was already out on Xbox.
Kart Rider Drift, little Mario Kart wannabe kind of thing. PS4, PS5, 2022. I think that's free to play. I want to say King of Fighters get an open beta launching February 17th next year. And then like an Among Us 3D Among Us clone free game for PS Plus, PS4, PS5. That's called First Class Trouble, November 2nd. That's like, in a couple days.
Next week. Yeah.
Yeah. God of War getting a PC release. Didn't we know that? Did that not leak? I feel like we knew that.
It was leaked and then the news confirmed, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
Returnal, Finally,
hell yeah.
Holy
yeah.
crap.
Hey, now you
got
save, suspend, which is amazing. Photo mode, I guess, as well.
Yeah. Means I might actually play it again.
Pick that back up. I'm kind of, I would love to, if I have it, if and when I get a TV, that would be pretty nice. We mentioned Animal Crossing with Bugsnax, but there's been actual Animal Crossing news. Tina, do you want to take the reins on this one as you pump your arms, both arms up and down?
Oh no, now I need to find the actual information and be informative, don't I?
They announced a cafe while you find the information.
There it is. Okay. So
The Roost.
We're getting the Roost Cafe added to the museum, which I say I know what that means, but this is my first Animal Crossing, so I've never met Brewster before. So I'm very excited.
Oh, so you know Brewster. Okay.
Got it. You can hang out with your friends and hang out with island residents at the coffee shop. They'll finally let Isabel leave her desk, thank God. But then there's a whole bunch of other stuff. There's new types of customization patterns, new structural elements you can use in your house. There's gyroids, which I've seen Twitter screaming about, and I don't know what they are, so I'm very excited to find out whatever that is. There's cooking.
Stretching.
You can do group activities like stretching in the morning with your villagers. You can do a little exercise together. That you can have a garden. This was the most exciting. You can have a vegetable garden now. So you can grow wheat and tomatoes and carrots and potatoes and harvest them and then cook little food dishes with which to decorate your restaurants. Thank you very much. And on top of all of that, there's going to be an actual expansion pack, which is an entirely new game for it, called, what was it, Happy Paradise Planning or something like that?
Paradise Planning, New Horizon, yep.
Is that right?
Happy Home Paradise.
Where you start a job as a planner of private island resorts for various villagers. And they'll give you
Happy Home Academy, huh, Tina?
I've never played it, and I'm very excited. Watching this trailer, the entire time, my head was in my hands, and I was just screaming, oh my God, for the full half hour or whatever it was.
Man, that sounds like the name of a brothel.
Happy
Paradise. Happy
Paradise?
Of a what?
Do you want him to say brothel? It again? Or are you,
it sounds like a brothel, brothel, whatever. However you pronounce it.
What?
Sex brothel, cauldron. I thought they closed that place. You know, you get little villagers and they say I want, a sweet wood cabin surrounded by nature with lots of teddy bears. And so then you just build them this dream island resort, and then anything you make newly in that island resort, you also now have access to make on your own island in your own home, which is fucking cool. So RIP the simple panel, which has been single-handedly carrying everyone's design dreams in this game for the year and a half plus that it's been out. Because now people are going to be able to actually have bar counters and actually have partition walls and stuff.
There you go.
I turned
John,
my
you gonna
Animal
play
Crossing
it?
On.
No.
You were so into it. I just wow.
The thing
so
is
over it now.
You got to keep this stuff going. You can't have the big gaps like they had.
We're in the middle of a pandemic, dude. It's not their fault. Yeah.
I don't think that's why. I think that, they had been planning this game for years. It's not like suddenly they stopped. Yeah, they just didn't plan it that well. But the thing that I noticed when I got my OLED, my SWOLED, was that I did the Animal Crossing, transfer app thing you have to do to transfer your stuff. And I did want to make sure all my stuff got transferred properly. And so I started the game and man, the load time to start that game is still 30 seconds or something crazy. That's what I want for an update more than anything else. More than a museum and this, I want them to cut the load time down so I can turn the game on faster.
I mean, they gave you portable storage. That's pretty great.
I'll try it. I want to love it. I want to get back into it. I just don't see. Once you fall off, it's really hard to get back on.
Right. I wonder if some of this is a reaction, wasn't planned and is a reaction to just how incredibly popular it was, right? That they reassigned resources and that's part of Who knows? Elden Ring delayed, but only a month, which actually I'm kind of surprised about. I thought it would get delayed, but to like summer or even fall or whatever. But it's not coming out in January. Now it's coming out February 25th. There is a network test for Chosen Few in middle November. So you might see stuff leaking out of that.
No rush.
The first couple hours of the game, I guess. Very interested to see other delays. Advanced Wars 1 and 2 Reboot Camp for the Switch.
That was surprising.
Spring.
Because that was like their December game. Like, what even is there? Do they have a big holiday game? I guess Metroid
they
was
don't
Pokemon.
Give a fuck anymore, man.
Yeah.
Nintendo doesn't. They're beyond having.
They're beyond the calendars games. Of man.
Except for the Pokemon games, you know, that are coming out.
They well, sure, but that's not that's. They usually have their own, you know, big game. In Pokemon's the Pokemon company, right? But they don't really have their own. Yeah,
I guess
they do not. These such trifling human concerns are not. Of,
I guess so.
Any interest in the calendar. Switch? They have a definitely ascended
Mario Party.
I'm actually really excited about that.
All right, so what? Go
the dismissal. Go.
Pikmin Bloom coming out what like this week?
This you is where try the out, I guess, is
in
welcome.
The West, or it's coming out, but not in Japan. Or something?
There's a trial in Australia. Trial in Australia is what I recall.
Looks like a walking sim or something. I don't know, like
a pedometer, like a fancy pedometer. Yeah.
Pokemon Go people
walking basically. And is there anything else from news we really need to hit? I want to get to at least one listener question.
Let's do three questions.
Okay.
Tight three? Yeah, we can do three. Let's do three.
A tight trio?
Tight tree.
Was there any other big news? I don't, there was, maybe not.
All right. So
do we, nothing comes to mind.
Not really. No.
Let's see. Where do we see? Okay. From, who is this from? Is the name above or below who submitted the above. Like equally
starts
spaced?
With bold. Starts with bold.
Okay. Got it. So, from, hacker alias Mike Honcho, where do we see the 8-4 Patreon in 5 years? I see myself.
That's one of the questions you would ask.
Yeah. I see myself retiring to work full time on making different news themes, for, along with Gabe every week, bespoke to the news of that particular day. But for now,
sitting on a pile of gold coins,
of course.
How I think of that news theme, by the way, is that like millennia from now, when alien civilizations or like they might not even use language to communicate, like different, you know, they have like nuclear waste, they have to develop these signs so that when people like hundreds of thousands of years from now find it, it's like they have to understand that this is dangerous and they need to stay away. And they might not be human. They might not speak English. They might not whatever. And so where this started from was me and Gabe asking ourselves, okay, when they find this podcast, how can we summarize that this is about video game news and have it transcend language and culture and even our bonds as human carbon-based life forms, and that's,
I remember crying during that discussion.
Yeah, I should have probably prefaced the news theme with that, but we can explain that on Twitter probably.
We'll do a making of as part of the Patreon.
So yeah, anybody else want to take a stab at the Patreon in 5 years? It will have subsumed all other Patreons. It will be synonymous with Patreon. There will only be one. It will be the 8-4 Play Patreon. It will be have like a market cap of Tesla. What's Tesla worth right now? Somewhere around that.
We're going to be selling real estate in space, outer space, like all the big wings.
We'll launch a few cryptocurrencies. It'll be cool.
How about this one from Bob Bobson, which I don't know if that is your real name, Bob, but are Western games in general seen in a better light in Japan nowadays? I know during the 8 and 16-bit days, they were considered mostly garbage. Well, Bob, that's because they were mostly garbage. 8 and 16-bit
Western games in the 8 and 16-bit era were like, God, like 85% trash, right? It was like licensed garbage and like...
Yeah, weird. It was shocking when one came that was like, wait a minute, this is not bad? Like,
right? Isn't that weird?
Yeah, like, I mean, even sports games, when Madden was good, when the first Madden came out, it's like, wait, this is actually good, and it's console game that was made in the West. But yes, absolutely. Like, we've talked about this before, how Western games now have been on the cover of Famitsu. Even Western indies have been on the cover of Famitsu, the Japanese gaming Bible, so to speak, like the gold standard in terms of what people are thinking and talking about in terms of games. Like a TGS showcase, I remember one year, I think it was for the PS4, the Tokyo Game Show showcase was like anchored by Ubisoft titles, basically.
Yeah,
I think on all the systems, I mean, less so on maybe Nintendo than the other ones, and Nintendo is pretty much rocking it right now in Japan. Western games are, but even on the Switch, they're definitely
Don't forget indies, though. Like Hades is doing really well here, and
Stardew Valley is huge. Undertale is huge.
That's
absolutely true. And I think that the localizations are getting better. They're doing voice acting for games. They're coming out sooner to the release times. You know, games like Cyberpunk have a whole Japanese Twitter account dedicated to them in the run up to launch. I would definitely say so.
But good question, because I would love to have a conversation just about why games are not now, but like someday, about why games, Western games, were so shitty back then. Like, what changed between then and now that everybody figured out, you know, how to make decent games? I don't know, but I'm glad it happened.
Well, yeah, I think a lot of it. Well, yeah, some of that was actually dealt with in that special that you were in, John. Do you want to hype and plug that special? I thought it was really well done.
Oh man, you put me on the spot. I don't remember the exact name of it now, but Nick Dwyer, a good friend of ours, did a documentary piece for what was it? Channel News Asia,
was it Singapore Channel or something? Something out of Hong Kong, was it? We'll find the name, but I'll talk about it. You find the name, but basically,
it was Channel News Asia, yeah. But Go ahead. I feel like I'm pimping myself, so you should talk about it.
That's cool. Find the name of the special, though, if you can.
Sure.
It was basically saying like how Japan it is being copied now. I mean, it really runs the history of Japanese video game development from the very start, which is really cool, and how it rose up, and then it kind of fell aside, and now how it's super influential even as other countries kind of take the ideas and run with them, right? We talked about this with like Genshin Impact and
totally.
We talked about it with that Bayonetta looking type game that I think was being made out of, was it China or Korea? I can't remember, but
it was Korea. Yeah.
It was Korea. We were talking about that. A lot of these games now are being inspired by obviously, or sometimes like really directly almost ripped out of, based on Japanese game makers' games, but then being like monetized or put on mobile platforms or doing different business models via other developers. So a lot of them now in other parts of Asia that are kind of rising up, but it traces that whole pathway. And that documentary's kind of theory on why Western games were bad then and kind of rose was that the consoles were made in Japan. And like that information and knowledge was shared here and people were doing a lot of bespoke work. And then once it moved to a more PC base with Microsoft and Xbox and everything that the Western developers could kind of wrap their heads around, that they have the PC development and also middleware tools and all stuff like that, like they kind of came charging back. So,
yeah, it's funny how like the technology on that level was the thing that was kind of becoming a big blocker. It's called Japan's Comeback Game.
There you go.
Japan's comeback game, and
it's free on the web. Definitely check it out. It's about an hour.
We can
right?
throw a link in the show notes. Yeah, for people who are interested.
Yeah, shout outs to Nick. He, like, I think they did a great job. You did a good job too in their job.
Thank you.
Well done.
That was tough. It was really tough for him to produce. That happened during the pandemic, and I know there are other people he wanted to talk to, and a lot of things that just couldn't happen. We actually got to talk. You know, they actually came to the office, and I was able to talk to people face to face because it happened like in this small window when cases were kind of down and things were kind of calm. But like right before it, and like right after it, everything shot up, and it was just bad time. So we were lucky to be able to talk. But
It was cool. So let's see. Thank you everybody for sending in questions. Please always do. But this will be the last one for today. What are some of your post-pandemic plans, professional and otherwise?
Ooh, interesting.
Alex, why don't we start with you? You're like a big world traveler and you've started traveling again already, but do you have any big things lined up for "quote unquote post-pandemic"? I don't know what that means because
it seems like it's never going to end.
What's normal anymore? Like, what is exactly? Yeah, exact. But yeah. Any big things you've been putting off or wanting to do or hoping to do?
I'm trying to buy a house here in Tokyo. I guess
there you go.
I mean that can go a million different directions depending on what happens, but that's the big plan that I have.
Build or buy.
Got to wait till after the pandemic though, because you got to have 6 feet distance and you know how close those houses are together.
Yeah, they're not very big, but luckily they're still quite affordable here in Japan. I would rather buy a pre-built one because I don't want to go through the trouble of, you know, talking to a developer and designing a house.
Don't you want insulation though?
I mean, a lot of new houses insulation do actually have them. So
are they starting to get there?
Do they though? I don't know about that.
Yeah. I mean,
I don't know about that.
We'll see what happens and maybe start traveling a bit more again. I'm hoping that events like GDC and E3 happen in person and we can start having real conversations again. I'd like to have
it'll be interesting. Yeah.
I'd like to have a concert with a game composer at some point, like a real one, you know, things like that.
Mm. Nice. Yeah. Anybody else? Any other big, exciting, saving it up, waiting for the pandemic to end to do?
I just want to go home and hug my mommy.
I'm kind of
traveling overseas.
All I want to do.
Right. Yeah.
Dad can have a hug too. He's
sounds
cool.
Pretty nice.
I'm trying not money, to though. Think about it too much. It's hard to think about it, right? Because you don't want to get your hopes up for something that could potentially still be a couple years away. It happens in my dreams, though. Like, I dream about being with, like, actually, the other day I had a dream about, like, being something like GDC. And actually, our good friend, I doubt she listens to the podcast, but Megan Scavio, who used to run GDC and now runs DICE, but, like, she was having a party. And you needed to know like some secret information to get in. And like in my dream, I was like dying to go to this party because I haven't been to a party in years because of Corona. And I couldn't get in. Like she was like, you have to know the info. I'm like, I don't know the info. And then like later on in the end of my dream, the thing that you needed to get in that I had missed somewhere, it was a Nintendo Fun Club news. Remember the Fun Club like members card or whatever that they had back in the day? You get a little members card, you had to have a Fun Club card to get in the party. I didn't have mine. I couldn't get in. I was very upset.
That's a very on-brand dream for you. incredibly
on-brand.
It
was so vivid. But I my friend, you guys were there and Jake was there. And like, I remember thinking like, man, this was a thing that was very normal for us. And we would do it several times a year. And I haven't done it in so long now that I'm just, I must be missing it because I'm having dreams about it.
There's definitely some meaning going on behind that. If you have a theory about the meaning of that, write us in because we're going to tell you now as we're ending the show, where should they write in their interpretation of John's dream, Gabe?
Well, you can find us on our homepage, 8-4.jp, our second home, giantbomb.com. Leave an interpretation of John's dream on Resetera, because we got a thread there.
Yeah.
And while you're at it, why don't you leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, also with an interpretation of John's dream. And finally, you can follow the show at 84play on Twitter. I'm going to ask you to leave an interpretation of John's dream there, too.
Why not? You can copy-paste.
Maybe change it from daylight to evening. Give it a little variety.
Sing it.
Use the creative juices. You can follow me on Twitter at Gabriel De Leon. Mark, where can they find you on Twitter?
I'm at Mark MacD. Alex?
At CVX Freak.
John?
At John TV. And Tina?
Tina, take us home.
I am Tina Butts with two T's and a Z, and Nintendo Land can't silence me.
Loud and proud. Yes, absolutely. You can be Tina Butts all day on this podcast. So I guess that's it. Thank you, Alex, for joining us once again. And look forward to what are you up to? Should you anything else you want to plug?
Me?
Yes, Alex, that's you.
Nothing comes to mind.
Okay.
I read a book you wrote not too long ago.
Oh, but I've plugged that before. No, this is the perfect plug. I wrote a Resident Evil book.
You're a business that sells shit.
Oh, I'm sorry. Limited run games. We're releasing this awesome Switch little mini arcade modeled after the cave shooter Mushihime-sama. Go check it out. I helped design it.
Oh, did that get announced?
Yeah, yesterday. The response has been very positive. My book is also coming out in Polish next month. So if you know Polish,
we have a big Polish following.
Yeah, I think it's coming out.
Rusty?
Yeah, next month in November. So I don't know any Polish, so I can't vouch for the translation. But if it's awful, I'm sorry.
Awesome. Good. Right on. I guess that'll do it then for this episode. Thanks for listening. As always, if you like it, until we have the Patreon up, tell a friend, tell two friends, tell your family. That about do it. So with that, who wants to take us out?
Where's everyone going, Bingo?
Welcome. What are you buying? Thank you. I see you have an eye for things. Gun's not just about shooting. It's about reloading. You'll know what I'm talking about. Come back anytime.